Welcome to the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Mover podcast series. Here you will get up close and personal with people who are taking giant steps for the betterment of cyclists and for the planet itself. Here with us today, having cycled over from Santa Cruz, California, is longtime NBG volunteer and supporter Scott Campbell. Scott will be riding from Boston to San Francisco starting in a little over 4 months' time now as a part of our fifth annual National Mares Ride. Okay, how was your ride in today, Scott?
I had a wonderful ride today. It was a little cold. I think it was in the 30s when I started.
30s? 30s?
Oh, yeah. 30s, yeah.
Wow.
It was like there was ice around and, you know, frost and everything. So it was a pretty chilly, cold ride for me.
And you rolled over to here to Palo Alto. That's what, 43 miles is what you had in your
43 miles from Santa Cruz to Palo Alto, yeah.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, I started around 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was pretty chilly, so I had to kind of ride fast to get my body temperature up, and it took me 3 hours to get over here, and I had a mountain in the way, you know, and I can only go about 9 miles an hour up these mountains, so it was kind of chilly in the shady spot.
Okay, so you planned, what, 2,500? Is the summit, and you probably had a lot more climbing than that, because there is up and down. There's a lot of rolling stuff out that way. You did that in a couple 3 hours time, huh?
3 hours time to ride from Santa Cruz to Palo Alto.
Jeez, that's not bad, Scott. It used to take me on my recumbent from Santa Cruz just to Los Gatos, which is on the other side of the hill, 3 hours, and you get to add about 20 into that, right?
Yeah, it's around 20 or 17 miles. I think it's 17 miles from Santa Cruz to Los Gatos.
I'm impressed. So, okay, you're going to be riding for us this summer. You've got a map over your bed of the whole routes I outlined from Boston to San Francisco.
That's correct.
Tell us about that map.
Well, I got a map of the United States, and I looked at the website, and it shows that we're starting in Boston and then going down towards Rhode Island, New York, and anyway, I put some tape over the route and just kind of traced it out on the map. And that sits over my bed, above my bed on the wall. And I look at it all the time, and I'm inspired to just do this ride. And that's what I keep looking at for my inspiration.
And pretty soon you're going to be able to look at a map and say you cross that with your own two legs.
That's right.
I know my own experience. I look at the map of the United States, and I think that, you know, hey, I pedaled across it. There are no limits. Is that where you want to be with your thinking at some point soon?
Well, I've always thought that there was no limits to anything I can do.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
And I use the metaphor in bicycling for everything that I do. In all my work, everything, I kind of use bicycling as a way of overcoming any kind of obstacles. If I can climb a mountain on my bicycle under my own power, then I think I can do anything in the world, whether it's some project on a computer or if it's some woodworking project or whatever. I figure there's nothing that should be able to stop me at all.
Right on. Okay, before we get into some of the other particulars of how you're training for your ride and where you found out about it and all that kind of stuff. In terms of background, you grew up here in the San Francisco Bay Area, is that correct?
Yeah, I was born in Redwood City.
Redwood City.
A few miles from where we're at right now.
Okay, and then you grew up in Fremont, is that?
Yeah, Fremont and in the South Bay Area,
Okay.
And then eventually moved to Santa Cruz, and that's where I'm at now.
Yeah, great. Actually, you're in Palo Alto right now. But
you're right.
That's where you rode from. I'm just kind of clarifying that just for the listenership out there that's kind of thinking, where's he at? Are the NBG offices still in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
No, they're not. So, Scott, you had kind of an unsettled past. When you were a kid, was it drugs or something like that caused you to be... your dad sent you away from the house? Can you feel like talking about that?
It wasn't drugs that sent me away. I was just incorrigible, as most kids are. You know, we just figure we know what we know is right, and our parents can't tell us anything. So my father said that when I was 18, that that was it. He was done, and he already put up with a lot. So he just sent me out on into the world on my own with no job, no money saved, and no place to go. And I had to fend for myself.
And along the way, you went out to your some cousins or something like that. You looked up back in the Midwest or something like that?
Oh, I took a trip after I graduated from high school. I took a trip across the United States, but I was hitchhiking when I did it. And I started from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I went up to Seattle, Washington, and I have an uncle that lives on Vashon Island. And I went to visit him for a week. And then from there, I have a grandfather in Minneapolis, Minnesota, so I went to visit him and stayed with him for a week. And then one of the guys I graduated with in high school moved to Huron, Ohio, during the summer after we graduated, and he was working at the Ford Motor Company. And so I went and visited them for a week, and I'm hitchhiking the whole time and spending very little money on any expenses. Eventually, I ended up in Phoenix, Arizona, where my mother was living, and that took 6 weeks, and I think I spent under $100 for everything, and you know, I got meals wherever I could.
What year was that, Scott?
That was 1970.
1970, huh. Okay, and you, where was that train ride you took about that you told me about on the way to Interbike in 99, I guess it was, when you and I took down there?
No, that was during that same trip. I was in Billings, Montana. I was having trouble catching a ride. And this freight train was moving through Billings, and it was going pretty slow. And so I just jumped on the train and rode it for wherever it was going to take me. And at one point, I got kind of tired, and so I just spread out my sleeping bag on top of this pile of lumber that I was kind of sitting on, and just climbed inside the sleeping bag and went to sleep. And to prevent myself from rolling off the top, I slid my body under this metal strap that came over the top of the lumber, so that if I was turning in the middle of the night, I would not fall off the edge. And that might have been pretty crazy thing to do. If that load would have shifted, I might have gotten killed by that or something. I don't know. But I'm here to talk about it, so I guess it was all right.
And you woke up, and you were in another state by the time you awakened.
Oh, yeah. I ended up in Nebraska. So that train ride was about 600 miles long.
Wow. And you woke up, you're covered in dirt or something like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of soot and kind of road grime that comes off the train as you're riding. And my skin was just black from all of this. And I went into some little cafe and went to the bathroom there, and I couldn't believe my face in the mirror. It was just amazingly dirty. And it probably took about 20 minutes to clean it all off, because I had to keep reapplying the soap again and again to get it all off.
Wow.
I was a different person when I walked out of that bathroom.
Oh, great. Now, you went on to become a roadie or something like that. You worked with bands, with music here in the Bay Area?
That's right.
Okay.
I had friends who were musicians, and I would go to their gigs and help them out, set up their equipment and such. And then over the years, they taught me how to set up and do things and started mixing sound. And so then I started applying for jobs at various nightclubs and with other bands, and I started traveling around and doing some road trips with some other bands. And we went to places like Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and British Columbia.
Okay.
And I was a sound engineer for several bands.
Did any of these guys go on to make any kind of a name for themselves?
Actually, none of them did. They were just in it for the fun, and when they're young, they get to do stuff like that because they're not committed to families yet. But eventually, they start having families, and then they start getting more serious, and they break away from the music.
So at what point did you get into cycling then? Scott?
Well, I became seriously involved in cycling about 1985, and
was this after the roadie stuff was done?
Yeah, that was about 3 years after I finished doing that. I started getting into being more responsible, I guess, as an individual, and kind of settled down a little bit. And so I started riding and found out about a bicycle club in Fremont, and I started riding with them, and I learned about bicycling and what kind of clothes to wear, what foods to eat, and things like that. And that's how I got started in that.
So what got you into it? You wanted just to become a more responsible, productive member of society, or what was the, there had to have been an event that capitulated this circumstance. What was that?
Well, all my life I had been pretty much of a roaming, kind of a gypsy kind of personality. Even as a child, like 3-4 years old, I was always roaming around. I'd be many, many blocks away from home, and the police would bring me home to my mother, and she'd say, "Where'd you find him this time?" And they'd say, you know, I was like 5 blocks away, and there was a park that was about 5 blocks away. I was always going to the park, and then the manager of the Sears store would call at my mother and say, "Your son's still, you know, he's down here again, and can you please come get him?" And I don't know, that must have been at least a mile from home. And, you know, I'm like 5 years old, and I shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. Kids today, they don't do that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I've always been a gypsy. So that was another thing. My parents didn't really want to get a bicycle for me because they figured if I'm moving, you know, going all over the world on a tricycle or something, and I get on two wheels, how much further am I going to end up going, you know?
You were 5 years old riding a trike to all these faraway journeys? Is that
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like all-day journeys away from home, you know.
On a tricycle.
On a tricycle, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, so about when I finally turned 7, they did get me a two-wheeler. And then, yeah, I still just, like, would roam all over the place. And I can remember when I was about 11 years old taking a trip that was probably, like, round trip would have been 30 miles. And they knew that I was going to do this, but they weren't sure that I was going to survive it. But I managed to survive it. And there was a couple of times when I would do those kind of trips, and I'd get caught out in the rain and just be soaked to the bone because all you're wearing is cotton clothing, and it just stays wet. And I would just get, like, hypothermic because I was so cold from just being cold, you know, the wind chill and everything.
So then you got away from cycling when you were on your train rides and you were being the roadie and all this kind of stuff. How'd you get back into cycling? What inspired you?
I'm not really clear on that. I guess I missed the thrill of being able to go places, and there's just a certain element of adventure every time you go out on a bike, and I miss that.
Okay, I met you probably, in the 80s when you had Bike Threads, you and Sandy. Tell us a little bit about Bike Threads. It was a one-of-a-kind clothing store in Los Gatos.
Well, when it started out in Newark, and we had one store in Newark, and eventually we got a second store in Los Gatos. And then the Newark store started failing, so we just closed that one down, and we just had the one store in Los Gatos. It started out, I was a traveling salesman for a delivery service, and during my journeys out to try to get customers for the delivery service, I would stop into bike shops and peruse their clothing, and then during the weekends, my wife and I would go out to these clothing stores that I had found and said, you know, we could buy our clothes, but it got to be really difficult to find stylish clothes that I liked. And I got the idea during those trips of, why not just have one store that has every brand of clothing that there is, you know, that you can ever find in one location. And so I talked to my wife about it, and we came up with some money, and we started the store. And at one time, we had over 30 brands of clothing.
And that's all you sold was bike clothes?
Yeah, that's right.
Huh, okay. And you went on to become an officer for the ACTC, the Almaden Cycle Touring Club. Is that during? Was that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And before that, I was the president of the Fremont Freewheelers for 3 years consecutively. And I did the newsletter for them at some time, too. And then eventually when I moved into Boulder Creek, and became heavily involved with the Almaden Cycle Touring Club and was a newsletter editor there, and then eventually moved into Santa Cruz and gave up my position in the Almaden Cycle Touring Club and became the vice president of the Santa Cruz County Cycling Club, and then eventually got to be a newsletter editor for them, and I was also the fundraiser coordinator for them, and that's what I've been doing for the last few years, putting on the Santa Cruz Mountains Challenge.
Wow, so what year did you move to Santa Cruz?
That would have been 1998.
And then in between 98 and probably about 2003 or so, you trained with or worked with Ram Racers?
Oh, well, that was also in 1998. That was the summer of 1998. I crewed for Shauna Hogan in her attempt to cross the United States, and she did eventually finish the ride, but she was not as fast as she had hoped to be.
Okay. And so let's come back to Bike Threads for a second, and then we're going to skip back from there to talking about how that experience influenced your upcoming journey. When your job ended, when you closed down Bike Threads, every time I see you, Scott, on a bike, you're just dressed in the nines. Is that how you're going to do our ride? You came over here this morning, and you just look sharp, and I had to get a picture of you straight up. And I'm just wondering, is that how you plan to go across all the way across the United States?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
During my times when I was advising people in what kind of clothes to wear, they would come to me and say, I'm going to go do this bike tour, and it's going to be a week long. And I would say, well, you have two choices here. You can either take two pairs of clothes, and you would have to wash the one pair that you're wearing and then have it dry overnight while you're wearing the next pair, and you'd have to do that every day. Or you could take seven sets of clothes and then collect all your laundry at the end of the ride and take it home and wash it when you get there. So which do you want to do? And of course, a lot of them would say, I don't want to do any laundry. This is a vacation. So I'm going to take seven sets of clothes. So then I would sell them seven sets of clothes. And that's how they would do it. So that's what I plan on doing, is I'm going to probably take as many clothes as practical. Maybe it won't be seven sets, but maybe five sets or something. And yeah, I'll be dressed very nicely. I think that motorists respect people who are dressed nicely, and I have a lot of pride in what I wear.
How many different sets of clothes do you have? Bike clothes,
now?
That is. Bike clothes.
Oh, well, I've gotten rid of a lot, but I think right now I could go 20 days without having to wear the same pair of shorts or a jersey.
Really? Wow.
At least 20 days, maybe more. Although I don't have 20 pair of shorts. But I've got more than 20 jerseys.
Man, are you going to be bringing a suitcase with you for all for all your...
Might have to have a trailer just to haul all that stuff.
Wow. How many different types of helmets do you have and shoes? Are those also... Do you accessorize for those as well?
I've got four helmets, and at least three or four pairs of shoes, I guess, for cycling.
Man, wow. Okay, now you've sat back and you've watched probably for the last 5 or 6 years now as we've sent people across the United States. You helped Scott Colburn. Do you remember Scott?
Yes, I do.
Years ago, helped him get from here in the Bay Area to the East Coast. And during that time, you were working in Monterey doing what, graphics work? Is that what it was?
Yes, I am. I used to work for McGraw-Hill Company as a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm. And so during that time, you were watching all this action taking place and getting our reports and seeing all these the fun these guys are having out there and things like that. What were you thinking when all that was going on? Did you feel
I was missing out. Basically, I felt like I've been wanting to do this for the past 18 years, and I just let work get in the way. And
uh-huh.
Now that I'm unemployed, and I consider it a blessing that I'm not working and not having to work. And so this is my one opportunity I feel that I can finally do what I've been dreaming about doing for 18 years.
So do you think that, for example, like when you were training, was it Shauna Hogan? Was that her name? When you were training with her, was that just part of the visualization process, kind of getting a feel for what you have up against you?
Well, that was a kind of a different situation, but it does give you the idea of what you have to go through and the kind of terrain you're going to go through. With her, it was she had a 10-person crew in 3 vehicles following her on the bike, and I the whole time I was out there thinking, you know, It might sound tough for someone to ride a bicycle across the United States, but if you got 10 people supporting you, they probably have the rider has probably got the easiest job of all. The crew has got the hardest job of getting food and mm-hmm. preparing it and making sure that everything that she needs is there when she needs it. And so all she had to do was ride her bicycle, and I thought she had the easiest job of all.
Huh. So, well, okay, so what's the longest tour you've done then? Longest multi-day ride?
Well, if you're referring to self-contained touring,
correct,
the longest
yes.
I've ever done is a week.
A week, okay.
Yeah.
And what was that ride?
I've done from the Bay Area to Yosemite and from Santa Cruz to Yosemite on 2 different occasions, and it was all self-contained.
Great. Did you go by yourself on those?
On the first one from the Bay Area, there was 3 other people with me. And then on the last one from Santa Cruz, I was completely by myself.
Great. Okay. Now, you're rolling some pretty good miles. Do you ride in the rain, Scott?
Oh, yeah.
And
I've been had what you call cabin fever. you've been in a situation where it rained many, many days.
Uh-huh.
It keeps you off your bike. And after a while, I just get to where I'm kind of feel cooped up and I just got to get out. And even if it's raining, I'll just put on some rain clothes and go out and ride in the rain and just have to do it, you know.
Okay. So right now, here in the winter, here in sunny, quote-unquote sunny California,
yeah.
how many miles are you getting a week, would you say?
Oh, I'm still riding anywhere from 100 to 150 miles a week.
Great. Okay. So you feel like are you going to step that training mileage up as the ride from Boston approaches, becomes sooner for you?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'll try to start pushing closer to 200 miles a week. And I'm planning to do some self-contained camping trips just to kind of do like maiden voyage kind of things where figure out what I need and how much I can pack and everything.
Great. Okay, so where our ride's concerned, where the mare's ride's concerned, typically we keep the mileage is 50 miles a day, and that's really lightweight for you. It's kind of like a sneeze.
yeah, it really is.
How are you gonna hang out with all that huge window of time you have between Mare's Ride cities? Are you gonna be doing touring museums, or have you given any thought to that?
Yeah, I've been thinking about just doing little side trips and going out into the countryside and seeing what's available and talk to people and really get to know the country as well, get to know the people in our country here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right on. And you're going to see it at 10 miles an hour. You're going to smell it. You're going to feel it. You're going to hear it. It's like that. Truly, the only way to see this United States is to do it on a bicycle. And I don't think you're going to be hammering that at the same rate that you hammered coming over here from Santa Cruz this morning. I think they're probably going to be doing more like 15, 20 mile an hour comfortable riding. Would that be a correct assertion?
I would say anywhere from 12 to 15 mile an hour average speed, yeah.
Great. Okay.
I mean, depending on terrain, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Your diet, you don't do sugar. I know that.
No.
Alcohol you don't do?
No alcohol.
Okay. Any other types of special things you do to keep yourself firing on all 13 cylinders?
Well, I've been a vegetarian for 36 years. I committed to that when I was 18. And I don't do any coffee or chocolate or any kind of sodas or anything like that. Nothing carbonated.
Huh. Great.
Pretty much raw foods, and whatever is cooked is cooked minimally.
Mm-hmm. Scott, when I'm going to kind of digress here for a moment here, but when you see the rampant pervasive, I guess is probably a better way of describing it, use of drugs in this society by not just for recreational applications, but for every application under the sun. What goes through your mind when you know that most all of that is this dietary consideration?
Well, yeah, it saddens me. I mean, just to watch television commercials that are constantly talking about this drug and that drug, it just saddens me that we're losing the war on drugs right here in what is acceptable. And I'm not talking about the illegal drugs that are rampant in our country, but the socially acceptable drugs. Take this one for your allergies, and take this one for depression, and take this one for whatever ails you, you know. And if you don't think you need any drugs, just go to your doctor, because they'll find something wrong with you and they'll prescribe something
right
to you.
Right.
And it saddens me, because there's such great holistic methods of preventing any kind of illness, and I'm a great proponent for that.
Scott, tell our listeners how old you are.
I'm 54.
And you're a hammerhead. Would that be
hammerhead? Well, my body's 54 years old, but my mental state says I'm 27.
And your body can do the work of a 27-year-old, too. Would that be correct?
I would say, yeah, that's very accurate.
If not younger. And
I sleep about 5 hours a day.
Wow. Wow.
And that's kind of pushing it sometimes, you know. 5 or 6 is the most I ever sleep.
Great. Tell us about the bike you came over on.
It's a bicycle that I put together myself. I just got a frame and all components and the parts and put it all together, and it probably cost me about $500 altogether for everything.
And is that?
But I used high quality parts on it.
Okay, now the frame, is that 531? Do you think it might be 531 tubing? Or?
Yeah, it's a steel frame, and it's got 27-inch wheels on it, and I put wide tires, so I think they're 738. It has drop handlebars that, actually they're racer handlebars, because the handlebars turn in towards the frame. After they drop down, they turn in. So it's another riding position, and it's very comfortable to actually ride in that position.
Great.
Has a kind of a wide saddle on it, although that's going to be replaced before the trip starts. Has 3 water bottle cages. It's 24 speeds. I put fenders and racks on it, and I carry my own frame pump and some tools as well.
And you even carry your own. You even carry your own spokes.
Yeah, that's right. The frame came with 2 spokes mounted right onto the chainstay.
That's so bizarre.
I kept those on there just in case.
Okay, you and your dad, you guys build vehicles for the Kinetic Sculpture races.
Yeah.
Are you guys? You guys got a vehicle you're going to be doing this year? Is going to be an off season for you?
Well, it would have to happen after July 31st, and
okay.
There are some races still happening after that time. So, We're going to miss the big race that happens in May, and it saddens me right now that he may be disappointed that we're going to miss that race. And my brother's involved with that as well, and I haven't told my brother yet, but I think he's going to be upset when he finds out that I'm not going to be available in May to do this race.
Oh, no. Now, when you say do the race, before you do the race, there's actually a car that has to be built, too. Is that...
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It's a human-powered all-terrain vehicle. It goes across land and water, and the race has water portions in the course, as well as the land and sand and mud.
So what is your dad, you've told your dad, what does he think about this ride that you're going to do? Does he applaud it, or does he...
The first thing he said is, are you crazy? Yeah.
Okay. So he definitely applauds you then, huh?
Oh, yeah. He knows. He knows what I'm made of, and he knows that this is something I want to do,
mm-hmm.
and he also knows I'm capable of doing it.
Great.
But he's not a very active person. I mean, he's constantly doing things.
Mm-hmm.
He's a retired engineer, and he's constantly got little projects that he's working on, but as far as being physical and doing exercise and riding a bike or anything like that, he doesn't get that part of it, you know.
Okay, and also what this has been for you, and I know that this we've had conversations about this, the whole experience of building a kinetic sculpture vehicle has been, it's been a wonderful chance for you and your dad to get back together again, to kind of bond with both himself and your brother.
That's right.
Okay, so you want to speak to that for a little bit?
Well, my father and I were estranged for nearly 28 years. We had no contact at all. We never spoke to each other or wrote or talked on the phone or anything. And I got the idea back in 2002 that I wanted to start trying to mend that relationship and wrote a letter to him. And he wrote back to me and he said it was something that he would like to try to do. Our first visit together, we spent 11 hours together, and it was like two college roommates who had been separated were rejoined. And then after a few months of talking with him, I told him about this connection that I wanted to get involved in, wanted to be involved with it for the past 10 years after watching the race in 1992. And he said, well, let's see what we can do. And I had some ideas, and he had some ideas, my brother had some ideas, and we just collaborated on the vehicle, and we built a three-person vehicle the first year, and we raced it, and we broke down the first year on the first day. It's a three-day race. We broke down, and we were out of the race. And then we came back the next year with some modifications to the vehicle, and we finished the race. And we were very happy about that. And then there was a second race in Sacramento, and we went and did that one, and we won a bunch of awards for our design and I think even speed, perhaps. And then we took a year off, and we came back in 2005, and we built a whole new vehicle with some of the parts from the previous vehicle. And the current vehicle is a tandem tricycle. And so it's two people, three wheels, and we've made lots of modifications for sand and for the road and for the water. And it's a pretty fast vehicle now. And I hope to make some more improvements on that and even get it faster.
So tell the listeners out there about that vehicle you created. It was huge. It was what called a Santa Cruz steamer or something like that.
It was called the River Queen.
River Queen.
Yeah.
Okay.
The River Queen was it was about 14 feet long and 8 feet wide. It had three people in it, and it stood about 7 feet tall. And it was in the shape of a riverboat, like you'd see on the Mississippi River.
And you guys actually built the railing around it and all that kind of...
The body was just made of wood, but it was decorated up with like freight that you would see on on a steamboat or a riverboat, and it had flags, and it had smokestacks and big wheels that turned and things like that. So it was pretty authentic looking.
I want people to see that, so I want to see if I can make the note here on this broadcast to ask you to send us that picture so I can put it on the in association with your presence at our iPod or podcast page. But Scott, we've reached
that point. I'd be willing to do that.
Great. We've reached that point in our interview where we've really got to start kind of winding down here. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just would like to say that the National Bicycle Greenway is a great organization, and I firmly believe that we should all strive to get involved with this organization and have safe bike paths and safe roads for us to ride on. And I encourage everybody to get on their bicycle, and even if you only have to ride 2 or 3 miles to go do some errands and maybe pick up some groceries or something, I encourage everybody to ride a bicycle, and I think the world would be a healthier place for it.
Indeed. Wow. Well, Scott, as I say in all these interviews, just thanks, and thanks for you. You're an awesome guy. You really are.
Well, thank you, Martin.
All right. So I can't wait to kind of start doing these things when you're actually on the road. Until then, which will start happening on August 28th to be for certain from Boston. Until then.
April
28th. What did I say?
You said August.
Okay, well, I'm in April. Okay, I'm in April out there.
April 28th from Boston.
Thanks. Thanks for knowing that.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.
Take care, guy.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. For more information about Scott Campbell, tune in to bikeroute.com/Scott Campbell. The spelling on that is SCOTTCAMPBELL. His email, if you're interested in maybe setting him up with accommodations or the like, is longrider_scott@sbcglobal.net. That wraps up another edition of the National Bicycle Greenway's Mountain Movers podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been NBG director and Awake Again author Martin Krieg. For more info about the NBG, go to nationalbicyclegreenway.com. To access this podcast in the future and to hear other shakers and movers that we've interviewed, go to bikeroute.com.